And tonight, our special guest on Coast to Coast AM is Richard Sauter. He's been on the program before. Underground bases and tunnels, hidden in plain sight. The Richard Sauter briefing, he does it all. We'll be back with Richard in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. Now, since he was a young lad, Richard Sauter experienced firsthand contact with a number of paranormal phenomena that have left him a bit puzzled. But you know what? He's been able to follow through. He is one of the best when it comes to research. His interests include underwater bases, tunnels, electronic mind control, freedom technology, human prehistory, remote antiquity as well. He's one of the best when it comes to talking about underwater and underground bases. And here's Richard Sauter back on Coast to Coast. Hey, my friend, how are you?
You know, George, I'm doing fine, thanks. How about yourself?
Good, Richard. Richard, I'm doing fine. You're out in there. Where are you now? South America?
Yes, I am.
What's
been down here half a year?
What's going on out there?
Well, you know, living in South America gives some perspective on the United States. First of all, because you're several thousands of miles away. Secondly, because there's a different culture, and thirdly, because the rhythm of life is here is different. The seasons are different. You're somewhat out of phase with what is happening in the States and the other hemisphere on the other side of the equator. So it really has served me well to give me a chance to reflect on the global situation and life in the United States and outside of it. And it gives a different view of the impact of the United States and the system that the United States has embodied and imposed on the rest of the world. So for me, it's been a very valuable time.
How are we perceived out in that neck of the woods?
Well, differently by different classes of people and people that belong to different ethnic groups and nationalities. For one thing, American culture is very heavily marketed globally. Hollywood has sent its tentacles everywhere. So, of course, videos of American movies are widely sold and distributed and viewed. And, of course, Hollywood presents a distorted view of life itself, not to speak of America and most Americans. The movies tend to be very superficial, very formulaic, very violent, very short on character development, very one-dimensional in many respects. So I would say the view that comes across America through popular culture is rather cartoonish.
Interesting. Now, do people out there, Richard, do they seem happy?
Yes, I would say in many ways. Here in coastal South America, people seem happier on the whole than they do in the United States, even though 60% of the people here live in poverty. So there are very serious or major cultural differences. I would say one of the reasons that people seem happier, to my mind, is because there's much less police intrusion. There are police, of course, but the police presence is much less intrusive here than it is in the United States. A smaller percentage of the population is incarcerated. The level of taxation is lower, and on and on. So I believe that that's probably a major factor in the people's what I perceive to be a greater level of happiness, notwithstanding that the poverty level is much higher.
Richard, while you were away, there's a group that believes that this Saturday will be the day of rapture and that many will be taken. Of course, I'll be here with Tom and the rest of the staff, and that it's history for us. And then by October 21st, it's the end of the planet. I'm pretty sure we're going to be around.
Let me go out on a limb here and say that while I certainly hope to experience a lot of rapture on May the 21st, I don't plan to be rising up into the air, into the clouds, or anything like that. And as far as the Earth itself ending this year, I rather suspect the planet will be going on for quite some time to come. However, we're certainly capable of blowing ourselves to thermonuclear kingdom come on most any given day if it comes right down to it.
Well, that's a good point. When you and I first started talking, Richard, we got into the underwater and underground bases. Are you still investigating things like that?
Well, to an extent, I still do have people pass anecdotal information to me, including this very day. I got some more anecdotal information. Living here in South America, I'm away from archival databases in the United States, although quite a bit of information is available on the Internet from a wide variety of sources. So that's my answer. Yes, I am, in a sense, still involved in that. But at this point, after almost 20 years of pursuing that line of research, I am completely satisfied and know beyond a shadow of a doubt that there are many secret underground bases, and also there are undersea, underwater facilities. A lot of money has been lavished on these things. There are a lot of different human factions involved, and a lot of anecdotal evidence that indicates a variety of extraterrestrial or alien factions or groups are involved as well. So it's a zoo down there, I think you could safely say. And the reality underwater and underground is, frankly, it's a science fiction reality. We are living on a planet that I would characterize as full of deceit, misdirection, illusion, and concealment. That's the way this planet is being run. And underground and underwater bases are absolutely being run in that way and have been for a long, long time. So, yes, that is a reality that I stumbled across for reasons that still are not completely clear to me, but in a sense I'm glad I did, because now I know that the world is not as presented to us by the mainstream news media. The government is absolutely lying to us about these realities, as are the major corporations on this planet. The major corporations on this world and the major governments of this world are absolutely complicit in these realities I just discussed, and they are lying to us about them.
Who's running the show with these underground bases and undersea bases?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question, George, and I'm not sure you've ever exactly put the question to me precisely like that. I have to say that my research and the picture that's come into focus for me over a period of two decades is that indicates that there are a variety of actors running the show down there. At the end of the day, it appears that there is an overarching entity that one of my sources told me is referred to in some clandestine circles as the organization. The organization evidently interfaces with a variety of terrestrial human agencies and organizations, and also some off-planet organizations and agencies. And it is powerful, it is shadowy, it is octopus-like, and it is extremely stealthy, extremely well-financed. And we're talking something beyond high-tech here. We're talking technology in the realm of science fiction.
Well, you might be right about that, Richard. And if it's true, then it's pretty darn dramatic. And we are the puppets, and they're the puppet masters, aren't they?
Well, they perceive themselves as the puppet masters. And here you're getting around to the so-called New World Order, which has very shadowy underpinnings and sources of backing. But it's been publicly referenced by a number of prominent individuals, including George Herbert Walker Bush. So, yes, they perceive us as puppets. In fact, they perceive us as their property, as their slaves even, to do with as they will, to manipulate like pawns on a chessboard, or like checkers on a checkerboard. And They absolutely do regard themselves as puppet masters, but you know what? It's possible to believe 10 false things before breakfast, George, and these so-called puppet masters delude themselves in that we are only as puppet-like as we want to be. And at any time, human beings are capable of reclaiming their sovereignty as really infinite beings. The possibilities of any individual human being, when you get right down to it, the potentials are infinite in scope. We potentially are capable of realizing, while living here on this earth, divine states of consciousness and all of the capabilities, the marvelous, I would even go further and say magical capabilities that are attended to and pursuant to developing or accessing divine states of awareness and consciousness. And this is what the puppet masters fear.
Well, there's no doubt about that. Richard, tell us what happened to you when you were by the military base, what you were trying to do, and what they did.
Well, I believe you're referring to my sojourn on top of a nuclear missile silo in North Dakota a year ago.
Yeah.
Yes, I staged a nonviolent, peaceful demonstration on a nuclear missile silo, a Minuteman nuclear missile silo in North Dakota at the Minot Air Force Base on April 15th of 2010. My intent was to voice my objection to preparations for thermonuclear warfare on this planet. I've previously done this twice before during my lifetime, back in the 1980s, in the first years of the Ronald Reagan administration. But I'm fully aware of the very real danger of thermonuclear warfare, literally at any time. This has existed my entire life and probably most or all of your life as well, George. And I felt that it was incumbent upon me as a concerned, aware human being to stand up and to voice my feelings, in essence to say that, hell no, not on my watch, not on the planet where I reside. I do not approve of preparation for thermonuclear war. I in no way support it. And so I went right to the nuclear missile silo in person to cast my vote of disapproval, my vote of no against these preparations. Now, of course, I'm acting in a long line of others who've come before me, and I don't feel the large shoes of someone like Mahatma Gandhi or Dr. Martin Luther King, for example, but I'm certainly acting in that same spirit of nonviolence. And I would recommend it to anyone, in fact, with the issues we're facing today, be it government corruption, preparations for nuclear warfare, an economic system that frankly seeks to enslave us, whether you're talking about the Internal Revenue Service, the Federal Reserve Bank, the insurance companies, the student loan, federal student loan racket, which is just a means of debt peonage, of roping students into a lifetime of grinding debt, whether it's any of these issues or more. I would recommend nonviolent methods to redress these very real grievances. The system seeks to provoke people or to goad them into a violent response, and the reason it does that is because the system monopolizes the exercise of violence. It understands violence very well, and if people act violently, the system is fully prepared to and will clamp down on them, crack down on them with violent countermeasures. So therefore, I recommend nonviolence. The system does not understand nonviolence because it, by nature, is not nonviolent.
No, not at all.
It is very ill prepared to deal with nonviolence. And you see how effective, for example, the Egyptians were with nonviolence earlier this year, where the Egyptians came out in large numbers and for the most part demonstrate nonviolently and brought about a regime change, a political regime change in Egypt, and actually brought down a dictator that had been in power for more than 40 years, a very violent, brutal, repressive dictator. And because the Egyptian people came out and demonstrated nonviolently, within 3 or 4 weeks, they brought down the government and instituted a new era in Egyptian history. And the American people are capable of doing this as well. They haven't to this point, but that possibility is there. And so I'm recommending to everyone listening, look to the Egyptian example. Look to the example of what black people did in this country back in the 1950s and 1960s with nonviolent demonstrations and protests and sit-ins. They persisted for a period of years, but they won great gains in the social order in this country, which persists to this day. Likewise, the Egyptian people, through using nonviolent methods of demonstrating and protesting, brought about profound, even revolutionary changes in their society. And so I recommend nonviolent methods to one and to all.
Richard, there's something weird going on in this planet with all these other things that are happening politically, emotionally, and also earth change-wise. I've never seen a time period where all this is hitting at the same time. Have you?
No, I haven't. But, you know, I've only been here 56 years, George.
Yeah, that's true. You haven't hit the right cycle yet, but I think we are right now.
We are, and this is the period, of course, that the Mayan priests and sages pointed to thousands of years ago. They evidently went into deep trance states where they looked at broad stretches of time from a cosmic perspective, and they put their finger right on this very period of time. And there have been others. You've had people on the program who discussed this issue and this period of time from different perspectives. But you're right, a lot is going on, and we are going to be whipsawed and slammed by a variety of events over the next year or two or three. There are going to be more damaging earthquakes, more powerful earthquakes, even more destructive than what we have seen in Japan, in Haiti, in New Zealand, in Chile, in Indonesia. They're not going to stop. We're going to have more of them and even more powerful. And it's likely that one or more of these could occur in the United States.
If I didn't know better, Richard, I'd say the planet is alive, the Gaia theory, yeah, and that it's fighting back.
Well, there's a lot of merit to the Gaia theory. I don't know if the planet is so much fighting back as it is doing what it always does. It is a living planet. It is growing. It is growing. Living through and working through growing pains, and we, of course, are growing and living through these changes with it. At the same time, there are a lot of social changes and spiritual changes that the human race is going through and working through, and this will express through economic and financial chaos, through political upheaval, through cultural and social changes. And there are also going to be changes in the climate along with this, which will result, and has already, in droughts, in floods, in torrential downpours and tornadoes, hurricanes, cyclones, and more. And this has direct implications for food production.
Absolutely.
So we're entering into a period where famine is going to be a real concern. And even if food is available, price is going to be a pressing issue for many people as these financial and economic crises come down on our heads like a bag of hammers.
And everything is so dramatic, Richard. Stay with us. We're hitting the break. We'll be right back with Richard Sauter. As we talk about parallel civilizations, what the heck is going on? Richard Sauter, our guest, and we're going to go back to him in a moment, live to South America, where he is on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. We're with Richard Sauter. Richard, we were talking about these massive earth changes, what might be causing it. Why the timing now, though? Why does it seem like everything's happening all at one time?
Well, you know, I think the researchers who point out that the solar system is passing through the ecliptic plane of the Milky Way galaxy undoubtedly are on the money. Apparently, there are energies associated with that that are concentrated right in the thin plane of the galaxy. And as we transit that region, it affects the total energy fields of this planet in every way and creates all kinds of changes in the climate, in the core of the planet, in the ionosphere, in the sun itself, and the types of energies that it emits. And it also creates changes in our bodies. We have an electrochemical component of our being, electromagnetic component of our being, and it affects that as well. It affects our minds, our spirits, our bodies. So it's all encompassing, and that appears to be the reason.
You blog a lot, and you have written recently about the bone lady who came to visit you when you were just a little guy, 3 years old. Who is the bone lady?
Well, you know, George, I've asked myself that many times over the years. All I can say is that, you know, I grew up in Virginia Tidewater, there in the southeastern part of the state. And one fine spring day in 1958, I was out on the screen porch of our little humble little house and playing with my older brother. I was a sickly child, feel fortunate to have survived childhood. And my physical survival was in question in those days. Nevertheless, during that period of time, I was playing with my brother one day on the porch, and my attention was drawn to a figure standing on the roof of the porch, peering down at me over the rain gutter. And for whatever reason, she was female, appeared to me to be a female whom I call the Bone Lady. That's what I named her at the age of three.
Yeah.
She was riveting, the most powerful personality I have encountered in my entire life. What she did was just blow my little three-year-old mind wide open, George. And I am still reeling to this day, 53 years later. The most powerful personality I've encountered in my life. And she downloaded a lot of information to me, which at the age of three, I had a lot of trouble understanding naturally. Gist of it is that she had me to understand that the reality we're presented with in the mainstream culture is not at all as things really are, that there's sort of a veil that's drawn over this world, and behind that veil, things are really much different than we're told they are. She also had me to understand that a very dark time of great trouble, turmoil, and chaos was coming. And so ever since that day, I've always known that this time was coming. Actually, I expected it a little sooner than it has shown up. But nevertheless,
she didn't give you dates then, did she?
Well, if she did, understand, George, I was only 3 years old, and three-year-olds have a real hazy conception of time, and I'm not sure at the age of three I fully understood that there were things called years and that they had numbers attached to them. I certainly could not count at the age of three, so if she did give me specific years, I no longer remember them at the age of 56.
How did you even grasp catastrophes and tragedies that she talked about?
Well, she didn't really talk to me, you see. It was basically telepathic. I have to say, her eyes were remarkable. And I was just drawn in through her eyes into the reality that she presented to me, which was of a coming time of just upheaval and trouble and chaos and catastrophe. That's the best I can tell you. And at the age of three, I didn't really grasp the specific details clearly. I just got a general overall three-year-old's a perspective of things, that a bad time is coming of great darkness. And that's about how I grasped it. Beyond that, the major understanding that I brought away from it was that, number one, the Bone Lady was not appearing just to everyone and anyone. for whatever reason, she came to me specifically. And one of the things she impressed on me was that I am different from the others. And in fact, that's true. But you know what? Each one of us is different.
Sure. There's no doubt. And this was a one-time visitation, basically?
Well, yes and no, in that I have seen her other times down through the years. From time to time, she will appear to me in a deep dream state.
Okay.
And what it amounts to is that in the dream state, I will remark to myself, oh, well, the bone lady is here again. But she really is very... I would classify her as a smooth operator, and as in terms of IQ, the IQ is off the charts. In terms of her knowledge of psychology and ability to, I would say, dial through or tune through the different levels of reality and awareness and consciousness, she has no equal. I've never met face-to-face another being like her in my entire life.
Why would she tell a little, telepathically, a three-year-old, something for you to carry for all these years? Were you supposed to give us a message? What was the meaning behind it?
Well, I'm sure. I'm sure. And in fact, I am delivering messages. I've appeared on the program a number of times in the past, over about a 15 or 16-year period now.
Yeah.
And so, yes, in essence, she did front-load me. And I'm not the only one, George. There have been quite a number of people who have been front-loaded and who have been given information and messages by a wide variety of entities and beings. And some of these other individuals have also appeared on this radio program and other radio programs. So, yes, it is my belief, my understanding, that she front-loaded me at a very young age, preparing me, in essence, early on in my life, to understand that things would be happening as the decades went by, and that, yes, indeed, individuals like me have been given messages and information to deliver to other people. And I'm sure it's as Jesus is alleged to have remarked 2,000 years ago, almost 2,000 years ago, let those who have eyes to see, see, and those who have ears to hear, hear. That saying did not originate with me, of course, but I'm repeating it and telling that those listening to this program understand that very heavy events are going to be coming down. Are you prepared? And most of all, are you prepared mentally, psychologically, and most importantly of all, spiritually for what's coming? Are you ready?
Well, that's a good question. How many people are actually ready, Richard? And as we approach 7 billion humans on this planet, as you said earlier, and as you've said over the years, we could have monumental problems here, food shortages, water shortages.
Yes. You know, George, that's right. And I love that bumper song you were playing about 10 minutes ago on the show. Was that by Dusty Springfield? Who sang that song?
Skeeter Davis,
okay. Well, I love that song. It's one of my favorites, as a matter of fact. And it reminds me of a little saying I have on my bedroom door that I see first thing when I wake up in the morning. And it says, love heals all life. It's a positive affirmation that was given to me by a dear friend who left about a month ago to the day. And it's true. Love heals all life. And if we are to pull through this very dark period that is going to buffet and slam us, and I'm speaking on an individual level in terms of our personal relationships, be they romantic or family relationships or neighborhood relationships, work relationships, or relationships between nations and amongst different societies and cultures on this planet, love is the only thing that's going to pull us through. And at the end of the day, it is what will sustain us and enable us to survive as a species, because what we're suffering from on this planet is a lack of love. We have plenty of hatred, plenty of violence, plenty of ignorance, plenty of spite and backstabbing of every variety. And The only possible antidote for that, the only way out of that, is love, George. It's simple to say, but unless and until we are willing to be more loving to others, and most importantly, to ourselves. Because you know something, George, you can't truly love someone else unless you first love yourself. And I'm not talking about selfishness.
No, I understand.
I'm talking about a mature love where you have deep affection for yourself from a spiritual standpoint, where you cherish yourself, where you actually have a profound regard for your infinite worth as a human being. Unless you realize and see that in yourself and deeply value that in yourself and nurture that in yourself, you can't do that. You can't have that same attitude and feeling for any other person, be they male or female, adult or child.
Tell me about your work with regards to parallel civilizations. What is this?
Oh, man. Now you've opened a can of worms.
Something's going on there.
Well, that's a big question. And, you know, it's something that I've slowly become aware of over the years. And when I was doing my, let me say this. When I started my archival research addressing the underground bases and underground tunnels issue, I went all the way back decades to World War II, to the 1940s, combing through at a fine level, document by document, through the technical literature, the archival literature, the engineering literature, the scientific literature, the military documentation, corporate literature, the academic literature, and a variety of fields. I was doing multidisciplinary research at an archival documentary level, and it was extremely time-consuming and tedious. But one of the things that I noticed in the process of doing that was starting in the late 40s and moving up into the 50s, there was a concerted research effort into electromagnetism, electrohydrodynamics, and electrogravitics. And there was a fair amount of scientific and engineering literature, and also some military literature on that I found in the technical documentation that I examined. And at the time, I wasn't so much interested in that. I was focusing on underground bases, so I didn't collect that information. I now wish I had it, but I took note of it. And I also noticed that towards the late 50s and moving into the 1960s, it dried up and it went away. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I remember thinking to myself, aha, a breakthrough was made, or breakthroughs were made, and this whole research effort was likely taken black and sucked right into the military-industrial espionage complex and buried under a real heavy level of security and securely compartmentalized. And I now believe firmly that that is exactly what happened. And in fact, there's reason to think that Ben Rich, the well-known director for many years of Lockheed Skunk Works there in California, remarked on one occasion near the end of his public career, well, it was public and not public in that most of it was classified, but nonetheless, he did publicly remark that we now have the technology to take ET home, and that it amounted to modifying or making some breakthroughs in some engineering and technical equations that enabled some engineering breakthroughs to take place. It was understood from the tenor of his remarks that this happened in a top-secret or classified compartmentalized environment, potentially right there at the Skunk Works. Nonetheless, for someone of Ben Rich's stature to say that the ultimate insider's insider clearly indicates that those types of breakthroughs have been made, that UFO type technology does exist, but it is not being publicly used. It is being very tightly held. Mm-hmm. And we, the so-called masses of the human race, do not have access to this. It's being used behind our backs without our knowledge, but certainly with our money, because we are being massively taxed and trillions of dollars are being funneled off into programs about which we are told nothing and know very little. But certainly the development of UFO technology, electrogravitics, anti-gravity, and that kind of thing is part of this. I have no question, because I saw all of that research that was being done by the feds and by major corporations and by the military back in the 1950s and up into the beginning of the 1960s, and it all went away, George.
In the fact that we've been funneling it, I think a lot of these UFO cases that we've seen, the sightings, we're probably looking at equipment we paid for.
In some cases, I'm thoroughly persuaded of that, George. What we see, and while I am not a ufologist, I have read a tremendous amount of ufology, and I know personally some of the best-known ufologists in the world, and have spent a great deal of time talking to them, both face-to-face and over the telephone, and also communicating via email. So maybe that almost makes me a ufologist. I don't know. But I can tell you that I certainly believe, and I think some of the other well-known ufologists would admit as much if you got them behind closed doors and they let down their hair, that there are, and when it comes to so-called UFOs, that while certainly some of them are theirs, an unknown number of them are just as certainly ours.
Probably. Probably. Richard, this work that you've done, culminating over all these years, where does it take you next?
Further and deeper. And I mean that both figuratively and literally, I believe. The direction in which I'm tending now is we know enough to say that we have been massively lied to. We have been robbed. The scale of the crime runs to the multiple trillions of dollars. We have been had, we have been used, abused, exploited, we have been gotten over on. And so I think my next step, as it is for a lot of people listening to this program, I'm sure, is to, it's time for redress. And I'm not saying payback, I'm saying redress. It's time for the next step for me and for society as a whole, to hear the confession of those who will come clean, stand up and fess up publicly and say, you know what, I was involved in these underground bases and these underwater bases. I was involved in these UFO programs. I was involved in these secret genetic engineering programs. I was involved in the contact programs with projects with off-planet entities and groups, etc. And here's what I know. Will you please forgive me for what I did, for my having taken part in these crimes against the human race, by lying to you, by stealing from you, by committing great crimes against you? We have lots of people that go missing in this society every year, George.
Well, that's true. Richard, hold on. I want to get your website out here for everybody, by the way. Richard Sauter's website. And he's got a blog, which Lex has linked at coasttocoastam.com, so you can readily go to it. We'll be back with more on Coast to Coast AM.